fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety, and those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. I'm your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is promoted by our partners, Dalmatian Productions, Inc., the Firehouse Tribune, FireTech, makers of on-scene soot and ash decon products, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the new cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5 Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. The second annual Surviving the Fire Service Conference will be held on February 27, 2018 at Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Billed as a behavioral health and cancer prevention conference, the event will feature speakers including Pat Morrison, the IAFF Assistant General President for Health, Safety, and Medicine, Dr. Denise Smith, Research Scientist at IFSI, and Captain Frank Lito, Deputy Director of the FDNY Counseling Unit, who will speak about health challenges in the fire service. There will also be a panel discussion on cancer in the fire service, as well as a presentation on tragedy and loss within the fire service from a chaplain's point of view. And a portion of the fees go to help the survivors of fallen firefighters. Additional information, including registration, can be found at http://nova.edu/conference/index.html, or send an email to us, dalmatprod@outlook.com, and we will be happy to send you the link. That's the 2017-2018 Surviving the Fire Service Conference on February 27th at Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale. Make your reservations today. We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great sponsors, the Firehouse Tribune. Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on and off duty, we live by one creed: excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune, and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And we're pleased to welcome our special guest for this podcast, Timothy E. Sendelbach. You might also know him as Chief Sendelbach, or also as the editor-in-chief of Firehouse Magazine. And if you've been a firefighter for any length of time, you know about Firehouse Magazine. If you've been a firefighter as long as I've been a firefighter, you remember when Firehouse first came out and what it meant to us in the fire service. So it is a pleasure to welcome you, Chief, and thank you for joining us. Just for our listeners to know, Chief is a 32-year student and educator of the Fire and Engineering Services, currently serving as the editor-in-chief of Firehouse, overseeing the content and editorial direction of Firehouse Magazine, Firehouse.com, Firehouse Expo, Firehouse World, and related products. Tim previously served as the editor-in-chief of Fire Rescue Magazine and FirefighterNation.com. He is a past president of the International Society of Fire Service Instructors and has served as an assistant fire chief with the North Las Vegas Fire Department. as the Chief of Training for Savannah, Georgia Fire and Emergency Services, and as Assistant Fire Chief for Missouri City, Texas Fire and Rescue Services. He is a credentialed Chief Fire Officer and Chief Training Officer with the Center for Public Safety Excellence and has earned a Master's Degree in Leadership from Bellevue University, Bachelor's Degree in Fire Administration and Arson, and an Associate's Degree in Emergency Medical Care from Eastern Kentucky University. Tim has also served as the editor of the International Society of Fire Service Instructors publication, The Instructor, and as a contributing author to numerous other publications, including The Volunteer Voice, Firehouse.com, Members Zone, National Fire and Rescue, The Atlantic Firefighter, and the Fire and Emergency Television Network, for which he was the writer-developer of the featured Survival Program. In addition to his numerous accomplishments as a writer, Tim has been a featured speaker in 47 U.S. states and 6 Canadian and 2 Australian provinces. In 2001, Tim was awarded the George Hughes Award from the Texas Association of Fire Educators for his accomplishments as a speaker and trainer in the state of Texas. In 2002, Tim was awarded the prestigious Innovator of the Year Award from the International Society of Fire Service Instructors for his innovative training ideas and concepts in the area of firefighter safety and survival. In 2007, he presented the keynote address at the Fire Department Instructors Conference in Indianapolis and was also selected to serve on the City of Charleston Post-Incident Assessment and Review Team following the tragic loss of our 9 brothers in the Sofa Superstore fire. In 2014, he presented the keynote address for the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation Life Safety Summit in Tampa, Florida, which was attended by 200 of the most influential leaders in the American Fire Service. He is a strong advocate for firefighter health and wellness and frequently competes in long-distance triathlons and related fitness events around the world. Except for that last sentence, the last part of it, long-distance triathlons, you and I are very much on the same page, advocates for firefighter health and wellness. Welcome to the show, Chief. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thanks, Steve. It's absolutely an honor to be here.
Thank you very much. Now, when we discussed the topic, you sent me something that really piqued my interest, and that is the topic, Observations from 30,000 Feet, Challenges and Opportunities for the Modern Fire Service. And that is a key topic that we've approached on this show with many of our guests, because there are so many changes happening so quickly in this field that, of course, at one time is most well known as being absolutely aghast at the word change of any kind. And now we find ourselves evolving on a regular basis. So what has been your view from 30,000 feet of some of these challenges and opportunities?
Yeah, let me just start with defining what I perceive to be observations from 30,000 feet, or why I state it that way. I tell people when I do a presentation is I have an endless library card, being the editor-in-chief with Firehouse. It's absolutely a great education that I get every single month when articles are submitted to me and ideas, presentations, and so forth. But the observations from 30,000 feet, I also travel a tremendous amount. I traveled 224,000 domestic miles last year. So I'm not home a lot. I get to engage with firefighters from all walks of life, north, south, east, and west, career, volunteer. And what I say is observations from 30,000 feet. These are the thoughts that I'm having after I've spoken with firefighters around the country or around the world in many cases, and I'm flying in an aircraft. So that's where the actual title comes from. But to kind of look at some of the challenges, I roll back a little bit and say we have never really been resistant to change. We've been hesitant. And what I mean by that is there are certain areas that'll jump on change in a heartbeat. And I look at some of our smaller organizations who can initiate change much faster than a major metropolitan department. They're more adapt to it, more willing to test the waters. There's not so many repercussions and hurdles. So the fire service as a whole, I don't think has necessarily been totally resistant to change. They've just been hesitant in certain areas.
Okay.
So if we were to look at some of the topics that I see, I will tell you it's scary at this point to think. Firehouse Magazine, as you described it, began in 1976 with Dennis Smith. And I can say back then, I'm sure the most prominent submission that he would receive of a topic of interest was on strategy and tactics, whether it's forcing a door, making an aggressive push on a residential dwelling or some high-rise operation in New York. Those are very common topics.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I can say almost 4-1. Four submissions to one submission, it's behavioral health related issues, whether that's PTSD, whether that's PTSDI, suicide. Those are all the things that we're receiving on a regular basis now. Somehow, some way, and I say this with the utmost respect for everybody that's going through those type of issues, we have made it vogue to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that is important, that we are willing to talk about it, and I think it's a great thing. But it's also scary for me to think, or for us collectively to think, that we have transitioned from the most common topic being strategy and tactics to the most common topic being PTSD and behavioral health-related issues. That's a huge transition for the American Fire Service.
It is, and I'm, you know, as you mentioned it, we're going through, and as we're talking now, we're going through the last 2 months of this horrible new headline in the news about this person and that person and unwanted sexual advances and stuff like that. And a lot of these charges go back, you know, 10, 20 years, some of them, and longer. Do you think that, just as they're saying now on that side, that the reason why they're all coming out is because it's become a little bit more in vogue to do so. You think that maybe with our push on firefighter health and wellness, fitness for duty, and even the cancer initiative, that the people who really have cared about our behavioral health issues finally have feel that they have a solid base that they can stand up and make it a more vocal issue for the entire fire service to understand?
You know, Steve, I've never looked at it that way, but I think you're right. I think that is one contributing factor. The Me Too clause that's in there, I think, is playing a part. And I think that's a good thing from our perspective, not mm-hmm. the sexual advances
thing
that's happening in the political world in Hollywood. But from our side, I do think that's a great thing. Now, the other side of this that I'll say is we got a lot of veterans. We've got a lot of overseas confrontations that are playing a part, because once those folks get out of the military, many times they resort to the fire service as kind of that second opportunity for them. So that is a contributor. And I'm going to say something that I've talked about many times in my travels that's a little bit radical from those two perspectives is technology. And social media, I believe, is playing a part as well. And what I mean by that is our lack of interaction, personal interaction, face-to-face with our friends. Our friends now are more so online than they are the guy or gal down the street.
Very true.
And that confidence in some of those relationships, I think, if is as great as social media is and technology is, it also has some hiccups. And I think that's one of the hiccups that has been created, is that lack of continual interaction and personal interaction that we've had many years ago.
Right, right. Very true. It's this whole thing of anonymity, mm-hmm. whereas we don't always know who we're talking because people talking with, because they can hide behind the anonymity of social media. And that also provides has a shock value when we find out that the person that we expected on the other side, that we thought we got to know, is nowhere near that, and has, you know, it's been a fabricated personality and a lie the whole time. And without that, I think, you know, that the pervasiveness and depth of social media, how far it is in the society, not just for us as adults but our children, and for some of us, grandchildren, and to see how kids as young as four and 5 year old can pick up a mom or dad's phone, iPhone, and use a kid's social media app in there to talk with other kids. And that, as you said, that becomes their play pal, as opposed to going out to the sandbox with a couple of friends from around the house and having that personal interaction.
Yeah, much different world. The computer screen makes a lot of great tacticians versus the mirror. We don't have the physique look in the mirror that we describe on the computer. So,
that's right. As my dad always taught me, he says, no matter what else, the man in the mirror never lies back at you. The man in the mirror always knows the truth.
That is true. It doesn't matter which angle you look at it. It doesn't lie. That's right.
That's true. True.
So, that's a good point.
I'm trying to think. Luckily, we've been able to get a couple of really good guests to join me on the podcast dealing with firefighter behavioral health. And I go back to my own personal minimal incident back in 77 when I first got on fire service as a volunteer, and I had my first really bad traffic accident with the car on fire and a victim trapped inside. He was still alive when we got there with the first engine, and somehow my partner and I, the guy who's still my best friend and one of my business partners today, he was just an 18-year-old kid back then, and we actually got enough of the fire out for EMS to finally get there and get him out, and he survived for 3 days. And we packed up, went back to the barn and cleaned everything up, and then when I was going to take my gear off, I lost it. I just started vomiting and crying, and I had never smelt burnt flesh before. I never heard somebody crying for help in that situation. And one of the guys who was one of the day men there, and he was a mentor, and he was a nice guy and a good friend, saw me coming out and wiping my face and my eyes, and he said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so." And he put his arm around me. He says, "Is it what you call just now?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "We'll suck it up."
Yeah.
We can't do that anymore.
In truth be told, we couldn't do it then.
Right.
You know, the nuts and bolts of the man or woman 25 years ago are the same nuts and bolts that we're put together with today. We took an approach that was different. And ultimately, you know, I wonder what hindsight truly does say about the repercussions of that, of all that. Inner anger, inner frustration, inner fears that those folks carried around for many, many years.
Absolutely.
And we'll never be able to statistically quantify that. But I think our approach now of putting it out on the table, admitting that we're men and women like anybody else, selflessly serving to the best of our ability, but yet at the same time we have weaknesses. And weaknesses can only be improved when you put them out there and you work to improve them with the help of others. So I think we're doing the right thing. And I think this generation that's coming up behind us, who will bear the baton for the future, will be much better off if we set the stage the way we are right now.
Well, I agree very much. And I think with the push on overall health and wellness, and especially now the cancer initiative, which I know back when you started and back when I started, we had no idea what we were breathing in. We often went in without masks, even though we had SCBA, but we didn't always wear it. And now we are learning just what we were facing. Maybe not as much then because of the change in the materials and manufacturing processes that we have today, but maybe that this overall push for firefighter health and wellness will also help lead this next generation coming up to be a healthier, be more aware of their personal fitness and health, and God willing, reduce the number of line of duty deaths due to preventable health issues.
Absolutely. And Steve, I think the key to that is not to be overly reliant on technology. We are looking for technology to fix are exposure issues, as opposed to the true depth of the issue being behavioral. And when I say behavioral, I'm beyond the bravado. I mean, if you're still trying to basically wear soot on your face or burn up turnout gear or burn up helmets to establish street cred, you're not the firefighter that you think you are. And I say that very boldly, not to basically boast, but that's not who we are. We don't need symbols to represent our actions. What we need to do is perform in the professional way that we know how and do the job effectively. And part of that is a behavioral change of the way we do things. And that relates back to, yeah, we know there are carcinogens. Every fire puts off carcinogens, always has. It's the products of incomplete combustions or a variety of carcinogens. We're just identifying how many there are now and putting specific names to them. But part of this is evaluating our tactics and applying some of the known research that's out there and saying, there is a better way. There's a better way for us to do it without exposing ourselves unnecessarily. I watched a news clip today of a good friend of mine, Chief Brian Fennessy of San Diego Fire Rescue. They had a multi-alarm, I think it was a three-alarm auto shop fire. And it was interesting. Chief Fennessy was being interviewed by the news, and he said, we are in a defensive position. And they said, well, why aren't you flowing water? And he said, we're waiting for the fire to create a hole in the roof so we can get direct access to the fire. Now, think about that. Nobody has ever spoken like that in recent times. We've always said, if we're in a defensive mode, we're going to drench this thing. We're going to fight it from the outside. Now, think of all the repercussions you create by doing that.
Right.
You squirt water. Now you contaminate the drains, the groundwater, and everything else. And secondly, the roof is designed to keep water out. Why not allow it to burn through? It's more complete combustion as opposed to incomplete combustion. It's burning hotter now. Once it breaks through, now we can hit the seat of the fire. And guess what? We haven't exposed a single firefighter unnecessarily to the hazards or the imposed risk of the incident.
Great.
It's looking at it differently. I know that doesn't come with a lot of bravado. You don't get a lot of bragging rights that we had in years past, but we're selfless, humble servants. We're not supposed to be going around pounding our chest saying how good we are. We serve the public, and that's what we do.
Right. You know, and with that being said, I'm going to pause for a moment to offer you such how well your beautiful editorial piece in the December issue of Firehouse regarding our late mentor and chief and friend, Chief Bruno.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You basically, as I heard you say those last few sentences, I saw his face beaming because you're saying what you were saying is part of what his message has been to us, and that some of us have really wanted to hear, and others, as you said, they're still trying to wear badges of bravado. And it really was a very eloquent article, and I really want to commend you on that. But let's we'll get back to the topic at hand.
No, let me just say something along those lines.
Sure.
I had the absolute honor, and that may not be robust enough of a word to describe my interaction with Chief Bernasini. Starting out in 92 as an intern, I had gleam absolutely in my eye, not knowing what to expect. When I went out there and worked directly for Chief Bernasini as an intern. And then for the next 24 years, interacting with him, not only at conferences like so many of us have done, but I've had a lot of personal interactions with him and a lot of meetings of lesser numbers in a national conference to really engage and learn from him. And unique guy, no question about it. And as I described, his fingerprints are on the American Fire Service for many years to come, and rightfully so. So I appreciate you recognizing that, and he certainly will always be in my thoughts. And, you know, somebody said it at a meeting that I was at recently, we ought to get wristbands with, I don't know what the initials would be, you'll catch on here in a second, but what would Bruno do? Mm-hmm. So whatever those initials are, Put that on a wristband. So every time you look down and just think, what would Bruno do? Or what would Bruno say?
Right. WWBD. Yeah, I like that. WWBD, WWBS.
Yeah, it's a lot of letters, but the point is there.
Yeah, it is. It really is, because so much of what he said, and I only got to see him twice, but I had the pleasure at the very beginning of this doing these broadcasts, podcasts, to have him as a guest along with Chief Dennis Rubin. They came on together to talk about a year ago's Wingspread 6 conference. And I was a little bit nervous before Chief Rubin put him on the line. And he said to me, Steve, he goes, he's just another firefighter. So we're going to talk just like we talk shop all the time. And that's all it's going to be. And that's the way it was. When he came on, it was like he knew me for 50 years. And it was a great, great podcast. And I have that to treasure. So I think at this point, what we'll do is we'll take a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Chief Sendelbach about these challenges and the opportunities for the modern fire service, what we're going to see in the near future, and hopefully he's going to help us look a little further down the line. So we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned. When you're done knocking down the flames, you want to hit the apparatus and head back to the barn, right? Wrong. If you do, you're carrying all types of poisons and carcinogens with you and spreading them wherever you go. But you can clean your gear and yourself before you even leave the scene with a Fireground Decon Kit from the folks at FireTech. This kit contains everything you need to properly and safely decontaminate yourself while still on the scene. This kit includes a pop-up pod for a private changing room, exclusive Fireground Decon hose designed to reduce contamination, all-natural decon towels, a special PPE cleaner formulated to remove stubborn hydrocarbons and that meets NFPA 1851 standard, and more. With a cancer rate among firefighters at 60% against only 20% among the general population, we can no longer ignore the dangers we can't see. For more information, visit their website at www.firegrounddeconstore.com or call FireTech at 954-906-1118. No matter where we live, or no matter the season, there is always work to be done that makes us sweat. Just how can we keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel and pre-moistened with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Just open your cool towel pack, remove the towel and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neck like a kerchief. Wipe your face, arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times again, and Cool Towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your cool towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your cool towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your cool towel today, visit www.cooltowel.com or call 1-800-918-8323. Remember, you're going to work and you're going to sweat. Make Cool Towel your answer to keeping cool. And welcome back to our second segment of this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And our guest is Chief Timothy Sendelbach, the editor-in-chief of Firehouse Magazine. And we've been discussing the chief's observations from 30,000 feet, challenges and opportunities for the modern fire service. And he's tackled some of the key ones in our first segment. And now we're going to talk about some of the challenges both firefighters and fire officers throughout the nation, while sharing critical insight as to the opportunities these challenges bring to current and, maybe more importantly, future firefighters and future fire service leaders coming up behind us. Chief, if you will.
Yeah, I'll jump on a relatively obvious one that comes up probably everywhere that I travel, and that's the generational issue. Mm-hmm. I posed the question to an audience, I'd say probably 300 firefighters in the room, and I said, I want to take the next generation out of the conversation. I want the folks who have the receding hairline and the little gray tinge throughout their dome to answer this for me. And I asked the question, how many of you have been to a conference or a presentation or read an article for that matter that spoke positively of the next generation? Not a single hand went up. And I think there's a powerful message in that. This multi-generational workforce we have since the fire service. We've always had a combination of multiple generations that made up our workforce and our volunteer troops. So it's not new. And it's always been the case where one generation frowned upon the next generation. So that's not new. But what is new is the conversation that is in my mind, such negative context of the people who are going to take our place and lead the American fire service, or the global fire service for that matter, to the next level. And I say that, and I say it in this context, that I believe it's our job, our responsibility to make the fire service, to leave it better than we found it. That's a common phrase we hear all the time. But I don't think we're there. In order for the next generation to be successful, we have to compromise in our efforts. And what I oftentimes hear is, I had to teach a recruit how to start a chainsaw. And it's very negative conversation. This person is frustrated. The guy didn't even know how to start a chainsaw, or she didn't know how to do this. These are common everyday skills for us. That's the way we grew up. We mowed grass. We did. This next generation may live in a condo. They may live where they don't have to start a lock or a chainsaw. So what? Okay, so that's one little difference. But I follow up with this question to this older firefighter, representative of my age group, and I say, did you ever ask a younger generation person how to operate your iPhone? I bet they know how to operate that iPhone a hell of a lot better than you do. That's the technology. That's the culture that they've come up with. And the reality is the skill sets that they're bringing to the American Fire Service or the global fire service are going to take us far greater. But we have to compromise. And we're not willing. We're still telling them they got to dress like us, talk like us, do all the things that we do. And I think they should have to do some of those things. But there's a happy medium. And somehow, some way, I think we need to get to that, as opposed to this autocratic rule or self-reliance on a paramilitary environment that is, it's got us to a great place, no doubt about it. But will it take us to the next? I'm not certain it will. There has to be a slight modification to that. With all the respect and praise of all the traditions we have, a compromise is not going to compromise what the fire service is about.
That's a great point. I think something else that you and I both know and experienced ourselves probably is that in a lot of the larger cities, especially, I want to say East Coast, but you have where I'm from, Boston, New York, Philly, Chicago, San Francisco, L.A., you have a lot of the multi-generationals was grandfathers to their sons, then to the grandsons. And so the multi-generational differences were more like kindly ribbing because it was within the family. And yet today, we're getting all different types of people joining the fire service and have been for the last probably 15 to 20 years, maybe. We got a much broader mix. We're not always seeing that the children of firefighters decide that's what they want to go into. They want to go into high finance. They want to go into nanotechnology, which we don't even know now. But as you just said, that nanotechnology might save a firefighter's life in 10 years from today. And we have to bear that in mind.
Steve, I'm glad you went there because I can't recall when, but I think sometime last year, may have been early part of this year, I wrote an article, or my editorial was the wall, the fire service wall. And it was referring to President Trump's advocacy for a wall. I was just kind of playing off of that.
I remember
not
that.
Saying whether you should not support that. I'm not getting into the political realm. But I said, think about it. Does the fire service have a wall built around itself? And my my meaning there was we have one point of entry for the fire service. And that point of entry is typically a recruit academy. You got to come through the same exact port of entry to get into the fire service. To get into prevention, you got to come through the recruit ranks. To get into any aspect of the fire service, you come through that front door. Now, my question and my challenge to folks listening is that the best approach? Because I think there are all walks of life that make up the American fire service and the global fire service and will make it what it can be. Not everybody can come through that same point of entry because not everybody needs to be on the end of the nozzle. We need people who are passionate, as you stated, about nanotechnology or whatever that technological advancement is, research. We need those folks to be contributors to the fire service. We don't want to shut the door on them. We need guys and gals who are advocates for prevention, code enforcement, building design, all those aspects. And that may not be the same person who has strong desires to be on the end of a hose line. So why is it the best approach to send everybody through the exact same point of entry and screen out those people who truly could make the fire service better?
Great point. You know, it reminds me of the words from my first chief, who I, even though I was 77, I just got to visit with him this past summer back in Greensboro, North Carolina, which was an amazing opportunity. But I was at my first working fire, and the guy who was in the jump seat with me, who I thought was going to back me up because this was going to be my first time on the nozzle. And the captain got us in, and we did all the work. But when I turned around, it wasn't him. And I asked the captain what happened to so-and-so. And he said he needed to make a change. I said, okay. So we got the fire out and we were fine. And when we got back to the firehouse, I asked the chief what happened to so-and-so. He was in the jump seat. I thought he was going to hump the hose for me. And he said to me in his deep southern drawl, he said, Stephen, he says, he didn't feel comfortable being that close to the working fire. But that doesn't mean he couldn't be a positive make a positive contribution on this fire ground. So I had him help with the ground ladders. He helped get him off the truck and off the snorkel, and we got him up on the roof, and he was humping the ladders as well, taking care of that. And I stepped back for a minute because I had probably only been in about 13, 14 months. And I said, wow, this guy really knows his stuff. That he, instead of castigating this firefighter for backing out, for coming into a work and structure fire, he found another job. He didn't hurt the guy, and he found another job from on the fire ground. So the guy felt he's still part of took part of the workload. And that was back in 77. If this country, you know, with all due respect to my chief, and I love him, I don't know if he's listening, but with this country chief from back then, why can't we apply that today? You know, 40 some odd years later, we should be doing that. That not everybody wants to make entry in a burning structure. And no, I hear all the people on Twitter, you got to make those aggressive entries. You got to push that door open and stuff like that. Well, I just was lucky enough to go to the Great Florida Fire School that was down here in Fort Myers about a month ago. And we saw a great video demo of how sometimes closing the door and wetting that door does a hell of a better job than trying to push in and just so you can say, I went in that front door with all that fire coming out. And it saved a lot of effort, saved a lot of water, and could have saved somebody's life. And that's why your point that you just said has to start to ring true for more and more people who are going to be the up-and-coming leaders behind us. They have to see that same point, that there are different areas of specialty today. Just like you can't stick anybody in to be a PIO. You just can't stick the guy who twisted his ankle to suddenly become a PIO and expect him to do a great job and know how to handle the press and the words to say. Well, we have the same thing happening with all the changes in the fire service today. There are areas that need real specialization. And we have to find the people to fill that, or we're not going to be doing our jobs correctly.
I can't agree more. And I think you tie that directly back to some of our health and safety issues, i.e. the cardiac risk that we've continuously seen in the fire service. Not only is everybody not made out to be on the end of that nozzle? Not everybody should be on the end of that nozzle. And what I'm talking about is some people who have put themselves through personal choices, hereditary issues, whatever be the case, they're not physically capable of being on the end of that nozzle. I say this, they are just as much a part of the fire service playing a support role as they would be on the end of that nozzle. Every piece of apparatus that I've ever seen in all my travels around the world, it's never had a single person's name on the door. It's always said fire department.
Right.
It's an organization made up of many people, not a single person. No single person puts out a fire. We do it collectively as a group. Maybe one nozzle person and five other support personnel. But we did it as a department, not an individual.
Very true. Very true. And, you know, we just have to hope that, you know, one of the things that pushed me and got me deeply involved in Twitter was every month when I read my copy of Firehouse when it would come, two things I read right off the bat. One was your column, and the second was the listing of line of duty deaths. And I kept a little scratch pad next to me to look at the percentages of how many of those firefighters, basically the deaths were attributed to a health issue. Of those, which ones did it look like it could have been a preventable health issue? And I kept looking at those numbers. And those numbers were like spikes going into my heart. Every month, we were seeing anywhere between 40 and 60% of firefighters. And I'm not talking about elderly guys over 55. I'm talking about 55 and under. Men and women dying of what appeared to be preventable health issues. And I just got so fed up with those numbers that even though I had gone on to Twitter for a different purpose altogether, and I had, from some of the people who took me under their wing and mentored me, and I started talking about leadership from my experience in nonprofit leadership work for many years, and then I started getting on this health kick, and that's when I met Dan and Jim and Aaron and some of these other great people who are helping in that health and fitness, and Todd LeDuc, who's been we've known each other for 20 years, although we've only seen each other twice, but we constantly talk back and forth, and he's a major contributor with IAFC and IFC. He's having a big conference down here in February called Surviving the Fire Service, and he was also one of the ones that helped bring me along about this passion of mine, that even though I've been out since 1985 from active service, that I'm pained by every single line of duty death due to a preventable health issue is one too many in my book.
I can't agree more. Let me say something in regards to what you shared. The only thing that you said that's not preventable is the ticking of Father Time.
That's true.
Father Time is the only thing that we can adjust. So that's one point to recognize. Now, what I'll throw out at you is you look through those statistics and those names that we print every month, as unfortunate as it is, when you see a 48-year-old young man with no cardiac history dying of a heart attack, when you see a 33-year-old who dies of cardiac-related issues and find out that his blood was coagulating, now you got to ask yourself a question. And the question that I've shared with people across the country is this, are we putting ourselves at unnecessary risk? We ask manufacturers who do a splendid job of listening to our request and designing equipment to do the task at hand. And they've done a great job. They do their research and they do everything we ask them to do. But I firmly believe that we're building an ensemble, a fully encapsulating ensemble, to retain and maintain tactics that we enjoy, as opposed to tactics that are most effective and efficient and look out for the safety and welfare of the individual, i.e. the firefighter donning that gear.
Right.
When you wrap yourself like a pig in a blanket in a protective ensemble, and we've all worn it, we're all aggressive firefighters. I love that comment, you know, that guy who raises his hand and says, Tim, you don't understand. We're an aggressive interior fire department. Who the hell belongs to anything but that? The reality here. Some of that stuff becomes barroom chatter. The reality is we're all aggressive interior firefighters. The question is are we interior aggressive firefighters at the appropriate time? And that's not a default setting. That's a calculated, measured time frame that we initiate that type of attack. But I really think we need to evaluate the ensemble that we're wearing, dig deep at that, and say, is that contributing? Because I think it is. I think the exposure levels that we're having is also contributing to it. And certainly our eating habits and the sedentary lifestyle that we're forced to live through some of the scheduling process and some of the environments we work. So there are a number of avenues that we need to pick at, and it's all not the kitchen table or lifting more weights. There are a number of issues that are deeper than that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the great things, here's, we'll turn social media on, flip it over to one of its great sides, is that we have so many people from the fire service and from outside looking in, helping us get that message out as well. And helping to helping to get the word to any firefighter that's interested in even hearing it. And I said, I've had, you know, Dan Kerrigan and Jim Moss were one of my first guests on the show. I met Dan at the fire school a couple of weeks ago, and what a hell of a guy. And the class that I saw, was in there for the beginning of his class that he ran, was just terrific. And you can tell from talking with him, listening to him, watching what they tweet on Twitter and what they're writing in their book and what they put out there in worksheets, is that they're looking exactly what you said. They're looking at the whole firefighter and what can we do to make the whole situation, both what you're facing and what you're wearing and who you are as a person, better. And how do we do that? And what your part is going to be in, because you have to play your own role as a firefighter. You have to want to partake of this smorgasbord that these people are putting out for you to give you different avenues and different paths to follow to help you get better, feel better. And probably one of the most other important issues is that too many people believe that the diagnosis of a health issue like high blood pressure or something else is going to take them off the line or take them off the job. And that is so far from the truth. I mean, I myself suffered from high blood pressure for 7 years. I got rid of it. I had medicine for 5.5 of those years, and then it just dissipated. It was gone, and I haven't had it since, and that's almost 10 years ago. So there are many ways that we can treat diseases and keep you working on the line, or maybe for a short time, you're going to do something else. But the fact is that if you open up and say, I think I might have this problem, or I saw my doctor, we'll find something from our side to help you. And I think we have to get that message out. And I think there's maybe, again, like you just said about how some departments see themselves, people are afraid to admit they have a problem until it's taken some sort of a toll on them.
Yeah. What scares me about that is someone not willing to admit that they have some issues, whether it be high blood pressure, cardiac-related issues, or something that could compromise their ability to perform. I hesitate to say it this way, but I'm going to. It's a selfish thing to do. And it's selfish in the fact that in the fire service, we're a buddy system. We work as a crew, whether it be 2 or 4 or 3, whatever the makeup is, we work as partners, a group. And if you hide something from me, you put me in a bad situation and you could jeopardize my safety and the safety of the rest of the crew. That's concerning. And you know, if we're truly a department, we're truly a crew, and we've got continuity through and through, we speak of brotherhood and sisterhood, we are transparent 100%. We know every aspect, every delinquency we have, every weakness that we have, and our partners. And you know what we do? We rise to the occasion. Where I have strengths, I compromise for your weakness, and you reciprocate that favor for me. Because we all have weaknesses. And at some point, we're going to have to admit that.
And not only that, but you could possibly they could possibly compromise the safety of a victim.
Oh, yeah.
And
the person we're there to serve.
Absolutely. Exactly. And what I did a couple of months ago, I did a show on my own, no guests, and I called it the domino, the first domino. And I've used it, and now other guys in the fire service talking about health are using it as well. And everybody has seen a show on TV where some guy sets up 3,000 dominoes and doesn't look like anything, but then after the commercial, they come back, he knocks the first one down. They all fall down in a nice order. Next thing you do is you see the Statue of Liberty or the White House or something like that. But on the fire ground, we're also dominoes. And that one firefighter who insists that he or she has to be the one through the door on that work and structure fire. They have to be because it's their cred, as you spoke earlier, their street cred, their department cred. They have to be there. But they also know in that still small voice in the back of the head that they have a health issue. But they can't tell anybody because that's going to destroy their cred. So they go through, they punch through that door. And just as they're opening up the bale, suddenly they get this horrible pain in their chest. And then everything goes in slow motion. They're the first domino that falls. The next domino is the person humping behind them because he doesn't know what happened. Why did the hose go slack? What's going on up here? The officer's going in with them. He doesn't know what's going on. What are these two guys here? All of a sudden, he has to radio out, get the roof team off the roof because we don't have a hose line. Get the RIT team, man. We need the RIT team here. Every domino on that fire ground falls and changes place, but they don't fall in order. A nice picture coming up. They fall all over the place. Because as we all know, when God forbid one of us gets hurt or takes ill on the fire ground, everybody begins to swarm around that as opposed to staying at their job until they're reminded. And they'll go back there. They're good about that. But they start swarming out. And that's the kind of danger that being the first domino in the fire service holds. And we have to break that mold. You can't be the first domino.
I agree.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Chief Tim Sendelback from Firehouse Magazine, and we'll talk a little bit more about what the future holds for the fire service and what we can look forward to those coming up behind us. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to 5-Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. The tone sound and the dispatcher announces, Station 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA, strapped on. You're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross leg, and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores in your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back with segment three of this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And our great guest today is Chief Tim Sandelback, of the editor-in-chief of Firehouse Magazine. And if for any reason on this earth you have not been reading Firehouse Magazine, I don't know who you are if you're in the fire service. I just don't know who you are if you're in the fire service. It has been a staple of the fire service since 1976. And it's one of the really the two leading magazines for the fire service that we as firefighters, whether you're still active, you're retired, maybe you're just thinking about going into the fire service, you have to read this material. It is going to be your pathway through the career if you're willing to listen, comprehend to what people write. Yes, it's only their opinion. But when you put these years of opinions together, it carries a lot of weight. So, Chief, now we're going to pick up on our final segment of this episode with where do you see us heading in the future? Where is this fire service as you're cruising at 30,000 feet and you've had this time to think about what you've seen, the near past for what you've seen from your personal experience before getting into the magazine industry, though you've been there for quite a while, but still been the chief in North Las Vegas. But now that you're cruising and you have a lot of this time to think about, what do you see for the future of the fire service in general and the American fire service in particular?
You know, Steve, I think it's probably one of the most exciting times. I'm now 30 years plus into the fire service and have had the great fortune of kind of seeing the progression of three decades. I look at it as now we're starting to look at with a much different viewpoint, research in the fire service. And I'm not just talking about fire ground research. I'm talking about health-related research, the stuff that's focusing on our exposures. All of those are going to allow us, if you couple all the research that's ongoing, some of which we don't even know that it's going on, and that's the unfortunate side of it, but it will eventually reveal itself. When we start really digging and asking hard questions of why we do what we do, it's going to allow us to evolve to, I believe, a much better level. You couple that with the generation that's coming in that is techno-savvy. They've lived their entire life surrounded by technology. So now you have research, knowing and understanding why we do what we do, the technology to take it and do it differently, coupled with an attitude and a behavioral mindset that's willing to change on a dime and to test and evaluate things, I think the future is endless for us. It really is an endless opportunity and very exciting opportunity. Now, that's the positive side. To look at it a little bit differently, I think we're going to have to re-gear the fire service. Now, some will argue whether fires are going down or fires are going up. I realize that as the population grows, they got to be housed somewhere. We're building more structures. So subsequently, there, to some degree, will be more fires. Now, with that being said, technology is playing a part in early suppression, early detection, and so forth. Also, we're buttoning buildings up. They're constructed in different fashions, hopefully in a lesser combustible fashion. We know some of those aspects are not necessarily true. But you look at that and you say, wow, we're doing 80% EMS. Should we be evaluating how we deliver service? Do we need to continuously send an engine company on EMS call? Many people, many departments are being challenged. Do we need this many engine companies? Well, I certainly am not going to advocate lessening the staffing. I think there is a need for staffing of the fire service currently and will be in the future. But I also think we need to reevaluate some of the methodologies of the way we do business and start preparing for that. Alternative tactics are going to lead us to different type of apparatus. I don't foresee us continuing to build apparatus the size and the magnitude that we currently have. And I say that there could be some manufacturers that want to ho-hum with that, but I've described firefighters as the great hoarders of America. We get a new tool and we put it on the truck. I've never seen a fire department take a tool off a truck or an engine. We are America's hoarders, and our apparatus are so huge. We just add axles and cabinetry. Now, comparatively speaking, and I know you got international guests listening, why do other folks have such small apparatus? And I'll talk a little bit about the European model. Sticker-laden vans. I mean, they got these little bitty pieces of apparatus, and we can make fun of them all we want. The reality is they're built to provide service for a purpose. But yet ours, I think, oftentimes are built because the Joneses live next door. Mm-hmm. And the question is how long can we sustain that? And why would we want to sustain that if we're truly reflective of what we say we are, humble public servants? Build it for purpose, not for all this glitz and glamour. We're servants, and the tools of our trade should reflect that. And let me just, I'll tell a brief story, Steve. I don't
sure.
mean to
monopolize
here, but I wish the American Fire Service, just for a second, would give consideration to a UPS model. Now, I know there are facets of UPS that I probably know or don't know that aren't as shiny and bright as I'm going to describe them. But here's the reality. UPS drivers' uniforms are the color brown. I oftentimes describe it as turd brown. Their delivery is on time, best in the business. Their trucks have six stickers. Are painted brown, have no more than six stickers. There's not a single piece of chrome on that truck. The truck never leaves the lot dirty. On-time delivery, outstanding customer service. And their investment is in their people. It's not all this glitz and glamour that we put into fire trucks to make them look pretty. It's about the service. And I think there's a powerful message there for the future of the American Fire Service or the global fire service. Build it for purpose, effectiveness, and efficiency. Ms. Smith, Ms. Jones, Ms. Rodriguez, and Ms. Wu will much express their appreciation much more if we do it that way, as opposed to putting another axle under the back cabinetry of the apparatus so we can carry more stuff.
Right. Well, that's a valid point that I don't think many people have even thought of. I haven't even heard it discussed over the last year or so. And the only side of that has, of course, has come up is the concept of the money for all that apparatus, because the municipalities, the villages, the cities, they're all seeing their own tightening of their belts in many different ways. And the department, especially, this is probably more true in relatively independent volunteer departments in certain parts of the country, but having been at two of them, there's going to be a time when even those people are not going to, even though they do their fundraising, they have the barbecue every year and the pancake breakfast, stuff like that, that the community is going to agree with you and that they don't, there's not the need in that village or that small county for that many apparatus that are all the same year, less than a year old, with every single thing, and that they have a 250-foot Bronto on them, but they don't have a building higher than three stories. But they can drive it in the parade and show how big the ladder is. And I'll stop at that comparison.
But I do know there's two sides of that argument, and I'm respectful of it. I think we truly need to evaluate what we're doing. I think ultimately finances are going to play a huge part in it, as they always do. Politics will play a part in it. But if we get ahead of the curve and we re-gear the system for the responses that are required within our community or expected within our community based on our planning, risk assessments, and so forth, I think we're going to be much better off. I would much rather go with a progressive fire chief's plan who has quantifiable, qualifiable data to back his or her position, go with that plan versus a outside consultant or a city manager, no disrespect to them, but someone who has lesser knowledge of what the fire service is, does, and needs, it just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Get in front of the curve. We write our destiny as opposed to letting someone else determine it for us.
All right. That's a great point. And that we have the ability to do that as long as we're willing to take the reins to do so.
Yeah.
And not be afraid to stand up for what we know is in the best interest of our department and our citizens, because they, as we've said several times in the show, our citizens are, they are our currency. That's who we protect. That's what our job is all about. If we lived in a ghost town, we wouldn't have any calls at all. But we live in communities, and our job is to protect those lives and properties. And we have to look at that first, not, as you said, the size of the apparatus, not how much stuff is on it, and not necessarily how many fires we have, we don't have, or we anticipate, and then they don't happen. Rather, how do we best serve our community with the services that they need? And it's our job to provide.
Yeah, we're an insurance policy for our community. The question is that what level of premium does the community want to invest in? And I say our service should always be premium. And what that means is very simply this: you give me the resources, I'll work with those resources. Now, ultimately, I want the best resources possible. I want the resources to be plentiful.
Sure.
But I'm respectful of a tax base. I'm respectful of people's financial income. And I will work within those constraints to provide you the most premium service for that dollar. That's what we're supposed to do. We'd love to have more, but we have to be realistic in what we do.
That's such an important point. It really is, because nobody has a crystal ball that works. And so we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. We've learned that the hard way several years ago. And all we can do is base our needs assessment on our past experience, on the current facts and figures and data that we have, and then using our best planning skills, gear up for the future. And that's with equipment, with personnel, with services, with practice, with employment, with recruiting. Everything has to be geared up for the future time, and not just say, well, it worked okay up to now. Why should we have to change it? We have to make changes. And that's how our whole conversation today started, was making the changes that are going to be necessary for us to be a successful fire service for the long-term future of this country and, as you said, for the global fire service as well.
And Steve, I'll take that one step further real quickly.
Certainly.
Is I don't think our response should ever be cut the parks department. And let me explain that. Is when we're in a deficit, when our backs are against the wall and we're chiming for finances, we shouldn't look at our collective partners in a community and say, cut the other department. I mean, oftentimes we say that, and I've experienced that personally, where our default was cut the parks department or cut the trash department. When you say that, I want you to also ask yourself, what family would move to a community without parks? What family would increase the tax base by moving there if they don't have trash service? The reality is we're in this together, and we've got to take a holistic view what the fire service is, as opposed to just saying, we want the fire service to be the best and the hell with everything else. It doesn't work that way.
Right. And it just coincidentally, just a week and a half ago, I was honored to have Chief Dan Jones be a guest on the podcast. And he brought up the same thing about Parks and Recreation. And he said, instead of saying, well, cut Parks and Recreation's budget and give it to us, he said, he said to a firefighter, have you ever gone to speak to your cohort in the Parks and Recreation Department and see how they're working? You ever find out what his daily routine is like before you so willingly throw him under the bus? Which was a great point. great point.
From a 20-plus year chief, a guy that's got a lot of road rash. I've known Dan Jones for 25, if not 30 years. And there's a guy with a lot of wisdom and a lot of road rash speaking the truth.
Yeah, it was a great podcast. And it was a great person to interview. And again, just at the same level, talking with you and talking with him and hearing that those similarities in the positive thoughts about the fire service, where our shortcomings are. And, you know, I think the most important thing today is we can't be afraid to talk about shortcomings, because we can, we grow from our mistakes. You know, as the commander once said, if we don't learn from our mistakes, we're bound to repeat them. And we don't want to do that. We've all made mistakes, and the fire service has made mistakes, and we can grow from them. And we have learned. We have grown from them. We look back at terrible fires that our forefathers fought and what the problems were, and now we've learned it. And even the work you did in Charleston, God rest their souls, for our nine brothers there, from that study, we've learned how to do things better. And every single time we've had a tragedy, our brothers and sisters go in, do the investigation, sit down and process all the data, and then come up with recommendations. And we learn from those recommendations. And if we are not willing to do so, then we don't belong in the business anymore. We have to be willing to grow and adapt to do the job that we love to do, because very few of us are here for the pay, especially those who are volunteers or paid on call. Very few of us are here for the sweat and the dirt and the stink and everything comes with it. We do it for the love of the job we do, which is who we are and what we do, as we take care of people on the absolute worst day of their lives.
Absolutely.
And that's what it's all about. So, Chief, I want to thank you. It's been a wonderful conversation with you today. Again, many thanks for taking some time out from a very busy schedule. I want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a happy, healthy, safe, and peaceful New Year. And I hope that we'll have you back again in the not-too-distant future. And we can talk about what you see from maybe 32,000 feet the next time.
There you go. Well, Steve, thank you so much. And let me say, on behalf of all our folks at Firehouse, thank you for the opportunity. Thanks for what you do and continuing to get the message out of fire service leaders around the country and around the world. So thank you for the service you provide as well.
It's my pleasure. Thanks very much. Folks, we'll be right back right after this. Cancer. Ugh, nobody likes to hear that word. However, as firefighters, that word sure likes us. Here are a couple of facts. One, did you know that among average adults in the U.S., the cancer rate is approximately 20% in a given year? The rate for us? Over 60%. Number two, when you don't wear your full PPE, especially during overhaul, due to the heat and sweat, your uncovered skin pores are wide open, and all those carcinogens in the soot and smoke love to dive right in. Number three, not only is the rate of cancer higher in firefighters, but we get all types of weird forms of cancer. Number four, when you don't clean or change your PPE and your uniform and you don't decon or grab a strong shower afterward, you're dragging all that cancer crap with you everywhere you go. The bays, the day room, your vehicle, even your home. Listen, our job is tough enough, and we have enough to worry about. Don't let cancer get in your way. Talk to your officers and your chief, your fire surgeon, or your personal physician. Learn what you can do to reduce your chances of dealing with a firefighter-relating cancer. Beat cancer before it beats you.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just gonna keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm your host, Steve Green. Usually in the podcast, this is where we insert an editorial called My View. So this is my view, but it's not quite an editorial. This is a thank you card to all you, my listeners, and all of you, my guests. This was a leap of faith that I took on after some prodding and cajoling from friends on Twitter to start this due to my background, not only in the fire service, but in audio and video. And I was pretty concerned at the beginning. I was afraid about starting it up if I would know how to do it in this advanced age that I'm in, and the advanced state of electronics today. But I persevered, and we got it done. But more importantly of what I did is that so many of you, my guests, were kind enough to respond, and when I sent an uninvited Twitter or email to you inviting you to be a guest on the show. And so many of you said yes, and many of you represent some of the biggest names in the fire service as instructors, leaders, teachers, and mentors. And that includes our late dear friend, Chief Bruno. I can't thank you enough for your allegiance, your co-promotion to help get the word out every time I Twitter about a new podcast. And I'm looking forward to many more podcasts with many more of you coming on as guests, both new and former guests coming back to fill the seat one more time. Because your wisdom, we share it with all of those who listen to the podcast. We teach all who listen to the podcast. It's up to them to accept it and put what they learn into action. But all we can do is present the best we can for the fire service. The service that I love, and I know all of you love just as much. So for my family, my partners, Dalmatian Productions, and myself, we wish you a very, very Merry Christmas and a happy, healthy, safe, and peaceful New Year. Thank you so much. God bless.
Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments, and that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You'll be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer, sure. It takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps another edition of 5 Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. We would like to thank our guest, Chief Tim Sendelbeck, Editor-in-Chief of Firehouse Magazine, for joining us today to discuss his view from 30,000 feet, what's ahead for the fire service, both in the United States and globally. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us both on iTunes and Google Play? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Fire Tech, Hennessy Distributing, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, and the Great Florida Fire School. Portions of instrumental music on 5 Alarm Task Force are courtesy of Lee Rosevere or the Columbia Orchestra. Find more of their music at happypuppyrecords.ca. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a comment about a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we're bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at cause_origin and stay up to date with all our podcast news, everything about Dalmatian Productions, and our new blog at our new website, www.bit.ly/dalmatweb. Merry Christmas to everyone and a very happy new year. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe and let's make sure everyone goes home.